Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod, and this is the third in a series of podcasts we're doing on technology and security. Given the feedback we've received so far in the series, I think we may make this a permanent fixture here at Tech Central. Today, though, I'm on the line to Greg Sorrell. Greg is Vice President at HID Global. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
All good, thanks. Now, you're on the west coast of the U.S. right now in San Francisco, is that right?
That's right. Right in Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley. Whereabouts in Silicon Valley are you?
The town's called San Carlos. So it sits right in between San Francisco and Silicon Valley. So it's a hotbed of technology.
Okay, great stuff. Beautiful part of the world. I love it in San Francisco. I can't get out there enough. So I'm having a look at HID Global's Wikipedia page here, and it describes the company as an American manufacturer of secure identity solutions and a subsidiary of Assa Abloy, a Swedish global leader in door opening solutions. Is that an accurate description, Greg?
That's right. Yeah, we have a focus in trusted identities, which include opening physical access, such as a door, as well as an individual's identity, which may be an identity card, it may be access to a computer, but it's really around securing access to information and things.
That's great. So, so you guys are experts in when it comes to biometrics, and that's really going to be the focus of our discussion this afternoon, or this morning, your time, Greg. Biometrics obviously taking off in a big way in consumer electronics. I was just at the Samsung Galaxy S8 launch last week, and that phone not only has a fingerprint reader built into it, most smartphones, of course, nowadays do, but also facial recognition technology. As consumers, we seem to be entrusting more and more of our personal security to biometric technology. Is this a good idea?
Yeah, we've seen a huge rise in the use of biometrics over the last 5 years in mobile devices, and I think it's affected all of us in our lives. That is only changing and migrating to multimodal biometrics where, as you mentioned, facial technologies, iris, fingerprint, will all be used together to identify an individual and confirm that they are the individual that they claim to be. Only biometrics can do that. A PIN or a password can't really define exactly who is inputting that into the system. Only through the use of a biometric that identifies a key characteristic of that individual is able to truly identify who that person is.
So it's presumably then a lot more secure than traditional security mechanisms, particularly the username and password mechanism. Should we be completely trusting of it, though?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about, and I think there are people that sit in different camps on how secure and private that information should be. The technology has really moved beyond where it initially started, which was, if you take a look at biometrics, it all started from putting a finger down on a piece of paper. So the public perception has also changed. It used to be if you're putting your finger down, then you've committed a crime, right?
Right.
If someone's taken your fingerprint, then you feel guilty somehow. Now we're accessing our mobile phones because it's convenient and secure. So convenience has really been the driver behind biometrics, coupled with the better security that you get out of using a biometric, that's really driving the adoption. So should we be concerned about it? Well, there is back-end information that's going to be contained and held. So if it's your fingerprint needs to match against something. And so in South Africa, you have the National Home Affairs or National Database that the Home Affairs maintains. Many of the banks leverage that to be able to determine or validate an individual's identity. And that information alone really doesn't do much. If it's your biometric template, which is the information of that's contained in your fingerprint, if you're using another modality or another way to validate the individual, such as liveness detection, then you're basically rendering that information in itself relatively obsolete. So it doesn't matter if somebody has your biometric information if they can't prove that they're the live finger that it should be coming from. Or in a multimodal setting, it gets much more complicated. If you use different types of biometrics to identify an individual, now someone who's trying to fake the system has to fake not only a fingerprint, but also an iris and maybe a voice recognition or a behavioral biometric, the way you type your password into the computer. So that starts to really complicate the scenario for the fraudsters.
Yeah, we've seen obviously the big tech companies move to two-factor authentication. The banks have been doing it for the longest time for online banking. Mm-hmm. But you know, Microsoft, Google, etc., all offer two-factor authentication now. So this multimodal security that you speak about is a similar idea. It's like two-factor biometric authentication in a way, is it?
Exactly. I think it takes up the level of security to a new level by making those individuals' modalities that you're inputting relevant to you as an individual and customized to an individual and their key characteristics.
I was going to ask. I mean, we hear about security breaches all the time. I mean, there was the incident with Yahoo, where a billion user accounts were stolen. When that happens, we typically would go to the Yahoo website or whichever company has been breached and simply change our password. But if our fingerprint has been stolen, we obviously can't change our fingerprint. Does that, do you think, make this type of security without this multimodal approach potentially more risky than using a username and password type of approach?
Yeah, let me answer that indirectly, and so let me set the stage a little bit.
Sure.
So within fingerprint biometrics specifically, which is really where our focus is, there are three elements that are required for a good system. You need to have a high-performing system that provides good image quality for every individual, and we all have different fingers. We all have different oil levels. We all have different jobs maybe that might affect how deep those ridges are between our fingers, or between the ridges and valleys on a fingerprint. So the performance and the ability to get good quality data every time a finger is placed on a sensor is important. The second thing is to be able to match that. So that relies on the backend system and how interoperable the information is that the fingerprint sensor gets with the backend information. That may be biometric information contained on the national identity card in South Africa and matched locally, or it may end up being a backend database. But that's a key element in a biometric system. The third thing is being able to prove liveness or have liveness detection around that fingerprint. So when that finger is placed on the sensor, it actually is also checked to see if it's coming from a living, breathing, alive human being. So it's real tissue that's touching the sensor, and it has real features that a live finger would have, as opposed to some fake finger using a latex or glue or gummy bears or that type of thing. Or even a finger that, which, you know, people love to talk about the gory details. What if somebody chops a finger off? Even that can be detected because it doesn't have the proper blood flow and it doesn't have the proper cellular structure of a live living human finger. So those three things put together, performance, matching, and liveness, really make a robust fingerprint system. So as that relates to the use of that technology and the replacement of a fingerprint, if for some reason a back-end database is breached and that data is in somebody else's hands, some people might say, well, okay, if you register two fingers, you've got eight other fingers that you can register. So there is a way to replace that data. The other way is to use a different hash algorithm, which is basically the way that you take that fingerprint data and turn it into a mathematical representation. And so you can change basically how that information, what happens to it, it changes it from that fingerprint image and makes it what's called the fingerprint template, which is, again, that mathematical representation of your finger or points on your finger. So, and then the third point, I guess, is adding the liveness onto that. You basically have a two-factor system, even though you're placing your finger down on a sensor. There's two pieces of information that must go with it, and it must be validated that that's the actual live finger that's being placed on the sensor.
Okay. So, I mean, the different types of biometric, I know that some of the local companies here, I think the banks in particular, have worked with voice technology. I know everyone has a unique voice print. But there are different types. There's iris scanning, there's facial recognition, there's fingerprint scanning, etc. What are you finding corporates are tending to deploy the most, and which is the more secure option?
You know, it really depends on the use case. So if I think today we talked about mobile devices, those are great for a single individual to access their phone. And so it doesn't work all the time. If you've ever grabbed a cold drink at a restaurant and then tried to put your finger on the sensor, that little drop of water is going to be enough to render it incapable of recognizing your fingerprint. So it's not robust. It's not a commercial fingerprint sensor, which wouldn't have those issues. You should be able to use a fingerprint sensor out in the rain, for example, in a downpour, and be able to walk in with a totally soaked finger and be able to place your finger on a sensor and have it be able to recognize you are. I mean, that's if it's standing in between you and money at an ATM. Pretty critical that works every time.
Yeah.
So back to the performance option. So it really, what type of modality that's going to be used is dependent on that use case. So if it's a mobile banking application, I would feel pretty good having a combination of a fingerprint and an iris on a smartphone.
Right.
Or even maybe a facial using the camera combined with a password or something else. In that mobile scenario, the reason why you'd want to use multimodal authentication using multiple biometrics, which is where everyone's headed, is just the ability that there's more than one thing that a fraudster needs to spoof to be able to access the system. Today, mobile banking, some platforms are using the fingerprints that are available. And you know, we're not seeing a ton of fraud in that space because usually you have your phone in your possession. And when you don't, it's not gone for very long before you're realizing that it's gone. We're unfortunately becoming very attached to our phones. But in a commercial setting, when you go and you open up an account or you get a mortgage at a bank or you're going to purchase a car and finance it, that's going to require a more robust system. And that's not something where the majority of the businesses are using fingerprint because it's the most proven, it's the most interoperable, it's the most relevant in terms of having back-end database and back-end data that may have even started from ink and paper fingerprints, but it's the most widely accepted and interoperable biometrics standard.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess the quality then of the solution that you're using, you know, is really dependent on how much you're willing to pay for it. The sensor that you have in your smartphone is probably a very cheap sensor mass manufactured in China, whereas if you're wanting to protect Fort Knox, you're going to go for a solution that is very much more robust, right?
That's exactly true. Yep. It's price does go up with quality.
Yeah. So you spoke about the ability to, for example, read your fingerprint in the rain, whereas a smartphone won't do that. But maybe, if you don't mind, Greg, just talk a little bit about some of the other differences between consumer-grade and commercial-grade sensors.
Sure. So it really comes down to the image quality. So what are you taking out of a fingerprint? It may also be the size of the information that you're pulling out. So a fingerprint sensor, if you've ever registered, you know you have to change your, keep moving your finger around, and it basically creates a mosaic of your fingerprint because it's a pretty small sensor, and it wants to make sure that it gets you every time you put your finger down, even if you put it down differently.
Yeah.
In a commercial grade sensor, the area, the window, so to speak, it's called a platen, where you put your finger down is much bigger. So you can be a very big person with huge hands and still be able to put your thumb down and capture a lot of information.
Mm.
Most of the biometric information on a fingerprint, most of it sits at the core of your finger. Most of the relevant data, the further you get away, the farther apart the unique data points are. So having that big platen area, when somebody drops their finger down and they're not necessarily familiar with putting their finger down on a sensor, it'll capture that core, that center of their fingerprint, wherever they put it.
Mm.
Whereas on a mobile device with the smaller sensor, it's going to be more specific to wanting you to have your finger either requiring it to have it be put in the right spot, or it's going to loosen the parameters to say, well, if it doesn't look exactly like your finger, but it's close, I'm still going to let you in.
Right.
So commercial grade sensors in terms of security are much higher because it's got a higher, better looking image, which means it has better data. And then it's able to say, okay, well, now I can say that the threshold or the variable of what I consider a match and what I don't consider a match, I can make much tighter because I have good data to start with. So that's really the main thing, is that the robustness of the system is going to allow for a better match with better data on a larger group as well, because many times you're not just detecting, are you the person who owns this phone?
Mm.
You're saying, are you in the system?
Mm.
And luckily, usually it's coupled with a name. So it's not a one to many million match. But it's in fact saying those people with the name, in my instance, it'd be those people with the name Greg Sorrell, go check and see if this matches whatever we have on record.
Mm.
And then it's able to open the system and match beyond that. But it knows where to go first. So being able to provide that matching capability. And then right now anyway, mobile devices have no ability to, or very limited ability to check liveness. Is that a real live finger or not?
Hmm.
The Apple phone has a capacitance sensor that can detect some form of electricity or, so there is some ability to detect that it's coming from a human.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also be spoofed, and that was proven pretty quickly when it was released. So a commercial grade sensor can't be fooled like a consumer grade sensor.
Do you think the commercial grade technologies will eventually work their way into smartphones in five or 10 years from now?
Well, everything gets smaller and cheaper. So yes, I think what we're seeing is, as our discussion was earlier on multimodal, that approach is going to fall into both camps. Whereas the technology was initially to identify someone in the court of law, that's changed to now we're accessing our phones. And I don't think people would have predicted that 10 years ago. So yes, the technology is getting, the chips are getting smaller, faster. The optics around the solution right now are somewhat constrained in terms of technology. We're about to where we can do what we can with technology that's available today. Yet, rumors have it that the next mobile or the next Apple phone is going to have a sensor that's built into the screen technology using a different type of biometric technology. So, yes, I think it's going to be reinvented in both spaces, both in consumer and in commercial. The technology certainly isn't at the end of its limits yet.
Great. Just as we wrap up, Greg, can you? I know you probably don't want to or can't provide specific examples, but you know, you speak to information security experts, and they say it's a constant battle to stay one step ahead of the fraudsters and the criminals. Do you? Do you guys see the crooks trying to beat this technology, employ this technology to break into systems? What are some of the things you see the bad guys doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you make a lock, you've got someone there that wants to break it. it puts a target on it, especially when there's a financial means on the other side. You know, given the market that we have and where we play with our biometric sensors, and we have a huge market base in banking. In Brazil, we have billions of transactions a year being used with our fingerprint sensor. So yes, there's a target, and so the fraudsters are trying to figure a way out to make a fake finger that can break, that can bypass the systems. So yes, you have to stay one step ahead. So how do we do that? Well, we make the algorithms that are determining whether it's a live finger or not. Those are privately held, and those are secured so that that information isn't widely available in terms of our secret sauce on how we detect liveness. We also continue to add additional security features into the device itself. So one thing is, what if a device is replaced and that backend system is receiving data from something else that isn't a fingerprint device, but is providing data that looks like it's coming from a fingerprint device? So we need to secure that communications channel between the backend system and the device itself, using public key cryptography, which is a common standard that we all use on the internet. So there are mechanisms that aren't necessarily related just to the fingerprint biometric itself to secure that whole system and make sure that we keep those fraudsters at bay.
Great. Greg, thank you so much for your time today. If anyone wants to find out more about HID Global, what is your website?
We are at hidglobal.com.
Easy enough, easy enough. Greg Sorrell is Vice President at HID Global, all the way from California, other side of the world, literally. Greg, thank you for your time today.